Ryan Callen is a longtime comedian, podcaster, and actor who is bringing those podcasting skills to Austin on Thursday, February 15th. He is going to be doing a live broadcast of The Fighter and the Kid with Brendan Schaub at Vulcan Gas Company, the 10 p.m. start time. And you can grab the tickets that remain at VulcanATX.com. And Brian is now nice enough to join me for a few minutes to talk about that and more. Ryan, thank you so much for the time. How you doing today?
Just a man, my friend. I'm here in Texas, great state of Texas, and loving it. So I always feel a little safer in Texas. I don't know why. I just feel like if the shit hits the fan, I can come out here and just hang out with one of my buddies who has access to a well and his own and a freezer full of game meat and a library full of guns.
that's the key. Is everybody's armed here, so everybody's afraid to pull that gat out on somebody else because you're going to end up getting shot as a result. You know.
Yeah, the problem is that guns probably aren't going to help you for the future that's coming down the pipe. I don't know how you shoot AI, so you know we'll see.
AI doesn't feel pain, and it's also a more accurate shot and much better organized than any of us humans are.
Yeah, your jujitsu is no good here. So, yeah.
That's right. So The Fighter and the Kid is going to be here in Austin tomorrow night. Vulcan Gas Company, you've been at Vulcan before. I think you've done stand-up there. You were part of Minds Fest at Vulcan last year as well.
I'm excited.
Really cool spot for stand-up, and it's great for podcasts too. What can people expect from this live broadcast for Fighter and the Kid tomorrow night?
We have a very special guest. I'm not going to say who it is, but just know that they're very special. And I think that it's the first time we've done this live show in a long time. So we're going to get out there and basically, I think, reflect on where we were and where we've come and where we are now. And we're going to talk about all kinds of things, where Brendan is in his life, where I'm at in my life, and just try to keep it as funny as we can. We're going to have fan questions. We're going to get the fans involved. We're going to take any question that they want. And we're going to have and then we're going to turn it over to our guest and just rock and roll and just try to make it a fun, funny, informative live event. And that's a long way of saying I have no idea what we're going to do. We have an outline and that's about it.
Well, you're the busiest man in entertainment. You've got like 35 different podcasts. You are doing the stand-up comedy thing.
No, I've narrowed it down to Fighter and the Kid and Off Limits, which I'm really happy is actually gaining a lot of traction. So
This conspiracy podcast with Tripoli no longer happening?
I didn't have time. I just didn't have time. I love Sam so much. And Sam and I are actually doing, we're co-headlining an event in Bakersfield, California, February 23rd. And February 24th, we'll be at the Rec Room in Huntington Beach, California. So I'm excited about that. But I just didn't have time. I got four kids now a fourth soon to be. And I just don't have time to do three podcasts. Uh-oh. It's killing me.
Congratulations. And the kids span from teenage down to about to be born. I'm curious for you, who is somebody who pays such close attention and has such really just sharp philosophical views. What do you think the biggest challenge is for parents in 2024?
Trying to instill a consistency, a sense of value. Well, I think the hardest thing is shielding them from the internet. From the, and it's not just, you know, people say, well, they're listening to the wrong things. I never worry about that. It's just getting their attention. You know, I have this thing I say in my stand-up. I bought my kids the iPhone and I haven't seen them since. And they kind of haven't seen me either. And all we are is just looking for dopamine while we scroll with our thumb. And we have, you know, I thought I could keep my kids off drugs. Well, I gave them the iPhone. And they're way more interested in being under their covers, quite literally, and hanging out with that phone than doing anything else. So what you don't realize is that this becomes the new normal, that your kids should have a tablet or a phone at the dinner table, or when you're out to dinner, or when you're with friends and you're watching the Super Bowl. Well, that doesn't have to be the case. So the hardest thing is just keeping their attention, having them be involved on a human level, connection with each other, getting out there on their bikes with a ball, whatever it might be. And I think that's a losing battle. I really do. I don't know how we do it. I was at a friend of mine's house. She doesn't allow, and she has six kids. There are no phones. There are no tablets, not in that house. They are not allowed. And let me tell you something, man. I couldn't believe it. Those kids were playing with each other. They were hanging out with us. They were present. You know who the only person in that room wasn't present? It was me. I was on my phone. I found five different reasons during the Super Bowl, maybe 10, to check my phone. And that's because I'm an addict. So every time I tell my kids to get off their phone, you know, I should be telling myself that as well. And I don't do it. So, you know, I think that's the biggest challenge. The biggest challenge is setting a good example and ultimately combating this tidal wave, which comes with a lot of good, but also comes with a lot of peril.
It's really tough for a generation of parents whose kids are in maybe their early 20s or teenage years now, because you just didn't know any better at first. You thought that it would help arm them with knowledge for the present and the future. But it turns out all these years later, we're finding out that these big tech companies are finding ways to hack into our neural systems. And yeah, too much screens for anybody, but especially these young developing brains, are really detrimental for their ability to think critically, to be present. I mean, some of the things that you just talked about, Brian.
Yeah, because information, this tree of knowledge called Google, et cetera, information does not necessarily lead, it may lead to knowledge, but knowledge does not necessarily lead to wisdom. It doesn't necessarily lead us toward truth. You can have a lot of information and have zero truth. You can have a lot of information and a lot of knowledge and not possess wisdom. And wisdom, in many ways, you can define it in a lot of different ways. It might be, I know how some traditions define it as being able to see the end in the beginning. How is this going to turn out? A wise person usually knows how to stop doing something before it turns into a disaster. They can recognize that that over there may look shiny, but it's not good for you. And sometimes I think that's the case with the Apple phone. And I think it's very significant. Again, something I'm kind of working on a theme. It's called the Apple, and it's got a bite taken out of it. Yeah. And you could make the argument there is before Apple and there is after Apple for all of us. It just became such a seductive piece of equipment and something that we can't let go of. And if you think the iPhone 15 is addictive, wait till AI 1000 hits, baby. Okay. Now, I'm an optimist, but we always have our challenges. So, and I think that that we'll never not have challenges, and we'll never not have trade-offs, and you'll never not have the opposites. You'll never not have the dynamic of opposites. Yes, the iPhone brings a lot of good. Yes, AI has incredible promise. But like anything else, and like a human being, it has its dark side too. So we've just got to be, we got to make sure that the good side wins.
It certainly does. And I heard you mention, you and Jamie Kennedy talking about the whole Apple thing, pre-Apple, post-Apple, on your Off Limits podcast. Great show, by the way. Highly recommend people check that out. Such a great exchange of ideas. And you talked about something else in that episode that, if you wouldn't mind, I'd like you to explain to the people watching and listening right now. And that is the cult of the amateur, because I was completely unfamiliar with this, but it is so relevant in modern times.
So the cult of the amateur is not, it's something I stole from somebody who I think wrote a book about it. And I think I interviewed the person a while back, can't remember his name, but it always struck me. I loved the saying cult of the amateur, because YouTube, you know, there's an old saying that, you know, opinions are like assholes. Everybody has one. And most people's opinions are not based on thought. They've not been earned. They are based on attitudes. And attitudes, what girds and undergirds an attitude is really an emotion. It's a bias that you kind of like sort of inadvertently or maybe even consciously absorbed, took on. It just made more sense to your biology, the way you're constructed, kind of the way some people are just naturally more conservative and other people are more liberal. Some people have an open personality, other people have a closed personality. And so I think that's kind of what happened was when it became very cheap to be able to shoot yourself and send that out to everyone had a voice. And you just have just a bunch of noise. And the challenge more and more, when you ask me, bringing it back to the first question, biggest challenge raising kids, the challenge is really being able to see what the truth is. You hear a lot of people saying a lot of stuff in the air. And the real challenge is knowing what to actually listen to, knowing what to anchor yourself to, knowing where the truth really is, because most of it is bullshit. Now, you don't want, though, to allow you to go, everything's a lie, everything's a conspiracy. That's not the way to combat that. You've got to be very, very careful and very, very deliberate about how you are, where you get your information and what to trust. And that's becoming harder and harder. I don't know the answer. I don't know how you figure that out, but there are probably places that you shouldn't look. Anybody who is, it's like this, any expert who's telling you they have the one answer, okay, this might be it. Anybody who's telling you, if somebody tells you it's easy, it ain't real, run. You know, like I have a joke, if I read a self-help book and it's going to be one page and it's going to say, if it's easy, it ain't real. And I'm going to write a nutrition book. If it tastes good, it's probably not good for you. So spit it out. That's it. You know, and the other maybe line in the book will be, it takes forever because it's supposed to. So anytime you hear anybody who's a so-called expert telling you that all you have to do is this one thing, these three things, anytime you hear somebody telling you that the way to get rich is by doing just these three things, anytime you see somebody selling you salvation, selling you longevity, selling you wealth, you might want to run. You might want to run, because at the end of the day, they're selling you something like the version of their penis. That would be, just have a good metric. Have a good metric. Most of life is, I don't know, sometimes, maybe, it depends. That's the best way to do it.
So thinking about the idea that things that are really easy are usually too easy to be true, I think that gets back to something that I think about as a parent of a 9 and 7 year old. And you're right, by the way, like, I've already told my kids, I know half your class has screens and you're on screens half your day at a really good public school too, by the way, which is infuriating. But you guys need to prepare yourselves to not have any form of cell phone, I don't know, until high school. And that first cell phone that you're going to get is probably going to make phone calls and send text messages, and that's going to be it. But I struggle with this as a parent of a 9 and 7 year old who wants to give my kids a good life, want to give them this comfortable life. And every generation has a little bit easier than the previous generation. And as a result, I think it's up to us as parents, if we're doing it right, to find the proper ways to challenge our kids. Sports can do that because it teaches teamwork and it teaches the need to really focus on something and work hard to get better at something. I'm trying to come up with other good ways to challenge kids, though, that aren't necessarily putting them in some sort of extreme harm in the process.
Just get really good at something. It doesn't have to be sports, man. It could be the guitar. It can be anything. But when you've got to get really good at something and compete, when you've got to, this is what's great about trying to be an entrepreneur or just trying to do anything in life, that, you know, where you don't have a net. You know, there's this great video on Instagram that says, burn all the boats, burn them all to the fucking ground, burn every single boat. In other words, it comes from the story of, I think it was when a Spanish conquistador came and came into the New World, and he burned all the boats. He goes, we're settling this. This is going to be, we're settling this land. It's all or nothing, motherfucker. You know, and that idea is interesting. You know, when my mother asked me when I decided to be an actor, and she said, what's your plan B? Like, don't you have a backup? Shouldn't you go to law school or get a business degree in case this doesn't work out? And I said, oh, no, I don't play that game. I if I don't do this, then I can't do anything else, because I just can't stomach doing any of that other stuff. I have to succeed. I mean, I have to, because if I don't, I think I don't want to be alive. Like, that's how desperate I was to be successful as an actor. I'm serious. When I auditioned for Mad TV, I got that part, not because I was experienced, because I had to. I mean, it was life and death for me. Practically, I'm not joking. I knew I couldn't get back on that plane and go back to my apartment in Hoboken, New Jersey with linoleum floors over a Chinese food restaurant. I couldn't do it. I couldn't go back to being a temp at Goldman Sachs or wherever the fuck I could get a job. I couldn't do it. I couldn't. I physically couldn't. I had to get on TV. I had to be a professional actor. I had to, quote unquote, make it. And I used to always say that to people. I go, you want to get into this business, you're competing against people as desperate as I am. And you're not going to do it otherwise. It's why you hear these tennis players. I know friends who are on the pro circuit, and I go, well, you didn't, they were like, you know, they were like 1,000 in the world or whatever. Maybe that's a huge accomplishment when it comes to tennis. You talk to them and they're like, I just couldn't compete with the Russian, Serbian, you know, Croat kids who had only that as an option, who lived in a van with their dad, who was their coach. And it was either this or nothing. You're not competing with people like that. It's why Khabib Nurmagomedov from Dagestan, he had fighting or a factory job somewhere in the Caucasus Mountains. Okay? That's it. You have two options. So there's something about desperation. Yeah.
How much of a desire do you still have to act? Because you've obviously, you are a prolific podcaster at this point. You do a great job with the stand-up too. I mean, do you even care about acting at this point?
Not as much. I never have, to be honest with you. It's a hard thing to admit. But I'm writing a script right now I'm excited about. But I like writing. I like writing. The acting is secondary. It's fun. It's fun. If there's a part for me in this movie, I'll do it. But overall, I love... I like stand up. I like the writing process. I like solving creative problems. I like coming up with ideas.
So yeah. That's hunger to succeed as an actor was less about doing it as an actor and more just a desire to entertain people. Is that what it was?
Yeah, I just wanted to. I had a different idea of what acting was, but yeah, I was so moved by movies. Mm. So moved by De Niro and Pacino and Walken. That's my generation. I just wanted to be part. I was like, how do I get involved with that? How do I work with people like that? Like, I watched Raging Bull and I couldn't take it. I couldn't take it. It was so good. I watched like The Deer Hunter, that Russian roulette scene. I was like, dude, like I felt so deeply. I just wanted to figure out how they, it was such a mystery to me. It's like, how do you do that? It's like watching a great boxer. You're like, how the fuck do you, how are you punching like that and standing? Where? How are you hitting? How are you doing that? How are you moving your head and catching shots? And so it's sometimes like things become such a profound mystery and they're so moving to you that you just want a flashlight into that dark room. And that's kind of how it started, man. And I wanted to be famous too. It just looked so cool to be loved by that many people and to be rich for something that you love doing that didn't seem like work. Seemed like play. Mm. Like I hated the idea of wearing a suit and going to work every day and my life at the end of the end of the day my life was a number. I wanted to be an artist. It just seems so romantic. I don't know. Yeah. I mean that's kind of what it was. And when I say rich, I just wanted to be when I mean rich, I saw myself like in an Italian villa with a beautiful woman and with wine. Like there was something, you know, I don't know. I had this really sort of commercial idea of what wealth was, you know, like that sort of not fancy cars or cool clothes. I just wanted to be, I just saw myself in Europe with a beautiful woman and an actor with a goatee. I think, I don't know what it was. I don't remember what money meant to me. It wasn't what a lot of people want money for.
Huh. What did you want it for?
I just wanted some certainty in my life, and I wanted to be, comfortable.
One less thing to worry about.
No, I think money was a metric that was instilled in me. Like it was a metric of success to an extent. So I knew if I had enough money. So I think I equated money with masculinity for sure. So I wanted to be a kind of man like that could provide for his family, you know, that could buy things. That's a man. That's what a man does. You know, you dress conservative, be conservative, but also buy shit that you know, for your family. Like you're the man, you're the king. You don't have to work for anybody else. I just got a thick wad. My grandfather was like that. My father, to an extent, was like that too. He was the guy, the decision maker. You know, he paid for things, and that was hugely important to me. And my mother instilled that a man who can't pay the bills isn't a man. You know, a man who has to rely on his wife is not a man. That was my mother. That was an Italian, old school Italian. ethos that I really truly absorbed, and I've never let go of ever. I mean, I've you know, my wife is a badass. She owned her own house. She had an amazing job, but you know, I pay the bills now. She raises my children. It's not easy.
You pay the bills in part through the stand-up comedy. I think I heard you mention to Jamie Kennedy that you're close to shooting that next stand-up special. Have you figured out the general philosophy of that next special yet?
Yes, I have. Yes, I have. Yeah, I have. I have, and it's something like, it's something in the area of, I think we've all been getting ready for the wrong enemy as men. We're spending a lot of time, you know, doing our war games. And the war is going to be very different, and the enemy is going to be very different. So, and all of us are going to be left with our pants down with a bunch of rusty, rusty weaponry. It's like we're kind of taking a knife. We're taking a knife to a gunfight, and that's what most of us are doing. And I certainly am. I think all of us are. And we don't have a choice because we don't know how to get ready for what's coming. We're not ready for. Some people are, but those people are probably what you would call the nerds. They're not as concerned with, you know, when you grow an aggressive beard and you're really good at jujitsu in your 40s and you've got a library of guns and your garage is converted into a CrossFit gym because you got to be functionally fit. All of that shit ain't gonna help you in the latter 21st century here. That's all hilarious and adorable, and you make a cute looking package, but you're not gonna be able to protect your family that way. It's gonna do fuck all for your family. When an autonomous robot does anything your child can do better, and when everything your child and you have learned and everything you've taught your child is actually irrelevant to the marketplace in 10 years, it's going to feel real shitty for all of us. And that's probably what I'm writing about. So,
all right, last question now, Brian.
Uplifting shit, huh?
Hey, telling the truth doesn't always involve being as optimistic as humanly possible. It means sometimes being pessimistic/realistic as well. All right, last question.
But the job is to make it funny. Yeah, go on.
Yeah, of course. And I have no doubt that you're going to do that. Last question, though, because thoughtful people, smart people, successful people tend to ask themselves a lot of questions. And usually there's one overriding question at a given time. Is there one question that you find yourself right now pondering more than the others?
That's a great question. It's a great question. And I think the one question that I'm constantly thinking about is, again, what hypothetical danger am I wasting my time getting ready for? And what should I actually be getting ready for? Where should my attention, my energy, my weaponry, my armor be pointing at? And what should it be pointed at? I mean, that's really the question. And I don't know. I don't know the answer. I don't know how to get ready for a future that I don't see myself being able to fit into. And when I say I'm really talking about my children. So I just find myself, and then I find myself realizing that what really matters is community and connection. And I had a recent experience where, you know, I bought a house in Florida, and I realized that you don't need a lot of money to be happy, and you don't need a lot of money for your children to be psychologically sound and fulfilled. You just need a good community around you. And that community can be middle class, working class people who are living their lives with great families. And if you know everybody on your block and you get along with everybody on your block, you can't put a price on that. You cannot put a price on that. You can keep your billions of dollars. If I know everybody on my block and we all get along and my kids get to play in their yard and everybody's riding their bike on the street and we're all hanging out, that's what I want. That's the way I want to live. So
that seems to really have been lost in places like California over the last few years.
You have no idea. Yeah, it has. Part of it's just that LA scaled around the car. So you're driving everywhere, you know, and there are exceptions probably in California, but for the most part, yeah, that's true. And anytime there's a lot of wealth in any community, big houses and big walls separate people. And you don't need anybody on your block. You don't have to even know them because you don't need them. Because all you can outsource everything you need. You can send somebody to the grocery store. You just don't live a real life. And I think that's the big trap. So
he is the fire-breathing dragon known as Brian Callen, philosopher, comedian, podcaster. You can actually check him out as a podcaster and probably a comedian as well, for being completely honest, and a philosopher too, for that matter. What the hell am I talking
about? BrianCallen.com. That's all I have to say.
BrianCallen.com is the website. Check him out. Fighter and the Kid.
I'll be at Louisville Comedy Club, March 1 and 2. So come see me, everybody.
Comedy Club as well, and Vulcan Gas Company for that Fighter and the Kid live broadcast. VulcanATX.com to get the tickets that remain. It's a 10 p.m. start time, so make sure to act now to grab those. Brian, always a pleasure, man. Thank you so much for the time today.
You're a good man, Trey. I appreciate you, buddy.
Thanks to Gentleman Jesus for the intro and outro music. Hear more of his work at GentlemanJesus.com. And thanks to you for hanging out. For more of the show and to connect on social media, visit BooksOnPod.com. Talk to you next time on Books on Pod.